Nazarian once said, "Creativity is not so much a boundless well, but an all-you-can-eat buffet of elements for your creative endeavor. Eventually, you've eaten your fill, and it's time to digest and make something. But at some point, it will be time to return to the restaurant." So, my friends, welcome back to EE Journal's Fish Frying Electronic Engineering Podcasting Restaurant. I'll be your server today. Welcome. Have you tried the bread? It's baked fresh every day. Howdy. Welcome to another Fish Fry Podcast, everyone. How have you been? I'm great. So, over the 9 years that Fish Fry has been on the air, I've heard many people say to me, "Your coverage is all over the place. You talk about so many different things. Why don't you narrow your focus?" And my answer to that, my friends, is, what fun is that? So today, in fine fish frying buffet restaurant form, we've got a little bit of everything. Today we've got LiDAR, we've got PCIe serial, we've got open standards like SOSA, VITA, and MOSA, and even a little bit about how a team of scientists in Singapore are using sunlight to break down plastic waste. Yes. So let's start with the LiDAR side of things. Please welcome Ian Dennison from Cadence Design Systems. Ian and I are talking about the cyber-physical world, why it's gold rush time in LiDAR, and what impacts decision-making by robots. Let's go.
My guest today is Ian Dennison from Cadence Design Systems. Thank you so much for joining me, Ian.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, so we are talking about the cyber physical world today. But first, tell me, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I think the pieces are all beginning to fall into place to enable a cyber physical world. We've got autonomous vehicles are pioneering the sensors. Edge computing's beginning to come on stream. AI's beginning to come on stream for the decision making. 5G is going to provide that really low latency. So if you've got robots talking to massive AI in edge computing centers, you know, that solves that problem. And then you've got things like natural language processing coming on. We see that in smart speakers. But you need to be able to tell the robots what you want them to do, and that's right on the money.
All right. Our senses as human beings are great. But do you think, Ian, electronics can do just as a good a job?
Well, it's taken 5 senses for humans to be successful on the planet, and I think it's going to take quite a lot of senses for robots and autonomous vehicles to be successful as well. Cars are taking on image sensors and LiDAR and radar, but I'm now hearing about microphones added so we can hear emergency vehicles approaching just like we do. So you need the senses. But when you look at robots interacting with people, you need much more accurate sensing. You don't want anyone to come to any harm. So, you know, for something like robotic neurosurgery, you need fantastic accuracy. So there are, you know, additional things that are really required for cyber-physical. I mean, LiDAR is going to be very valuable here. Silicon photonics can get you an ultra-fine resolution mapping, and particularly when you put feedback loops in. So these technologies are great, but they need a bit more development.
So solid-state LiDAR may be under the microscope, but what about image sensors and radar? Aren't they already well understood?
Yeah, but for these kind of applications, there's some other requirements. You get things like flicker with the LED streetlights and the car lighting, and you get motion distortion, and you've got image stabilization. These are all impacting the decision-making that any robot or car needs to make. And then high definition is another problem, a high dynamic range. If you've got a really dark tunnel ahead, you know, how far can you really see into that tunnel before the car needs to decide, hey, I've got to slow down here, I don't know what's in there. So quite a lot of careful design problems. You stick a camera behind a windshield and there's some big thermal challenges. So it's not straightforward.
Okay, so what is Cadence in particular doing in this arena?
Well, it's gold rush time right now on solid state LiDAR. We've got at least 30 companies that we know who are working on many in dark mode. But we've got the 3DIC solutions, we've got the photonic solutions. If you look at the image sensors, we've been using our AD product suite there, and we announced Spectre X, which provides 10 times the performance over what we've had before with the silicon accuracy people have expected. So that's all goodness. Our Virtuoso RF is great for radar. We've got EM in there from Sigrity and National Instruments. I mean, these are just some of the headline tools, but it's a really long list.
All right, Ian, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, let's talk about Edinburgh for a little bit. And one thing that I've always wanted to attend was the Fringe Festival. So tell my audience a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure, yeah. The Fringe is a madhouse. It's the biggest arts festival in the world. It's at least 40 times bigger than the next largest festival. Yeah, it's huge. It runs for 3 weeks, 50,000 show performances, stand-up comedy, theatre, physical theatre, music. You know, I've been to shows in big venues, small church halls and private apartments in the back of taxis where the audience puts their head up through holes in the stage. It's mad, but I go every year.
I love it. Well, Ian, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you once again for joining me.
Thank you.
Next up, please welcome Ken Grubb and Dave Caserza from Elma Electronic. Dave, Ken, and I are checking out new standards for packaging and why new system architectures and new guidance for those system architectures is needed today more than ever before. Let's go.
My guest today is Ken Grubb from Elma Electronic. Thank you so much for joining me, Ken.
Nice to be here, Amelia. Thank you.
So we are talking about trends in packaging. And with standard bodies like MOSA and SOSA and others have a lot to do with this, right?
Yes, they do. They are developing the concepts for the new system architectures that are required and trying to provide guidance for the system builders so they can achieve the platforms that the government's trying to implement.
So how specifically does VITA play into this scheme of things here?
So VITA is a standards body that has existed for VME bus systems and now VPX systems. And SOSA, which is the umbrella standard for the modular open system architectures, needed to select a hardware standard. So they chose OpenVPX, which is guided by VITA, or it's part of the VITA organization, standards body, if you will. So the result of the choices that are made by SOSA end up in VITA, and VITA becomes the approved standards body for the hardware implementation. So actually what we'll all be building to are VITA standards at the end of the day.
Ken, system infrastructure plays a big part in all of this too, right?
Yeah, so as packaging people, we have to implement backplanes, but realistically we're implementing an infrastructure of different components. So what's important is that we provide a backplane that will allow us to implement a network, which everything is basically connected together on a large part by Ethernet. And then there's other parts of the infrastructure like power and then management of the infrastructure, also timing. So you have clock distribution and different timing elements that are part of it. So when you put all that together, we end up making a backplane and a chassis that will house that. So we build basically a good foundation for the system.
Now, signal rates are a huge issue in interfaces specifically, but Ken, what kinds of trends are you seeing particularly with packaging here?
So here we see us move from, say, if you look at PCIe, which is a data interconnect, high speed, low latency, we see that moving from 8 gigabits or 8 giga transfers per second to 16, and then ultimately up to 32, and it won't be too long before we see that happen. We're already at generation 4, which is at 16. With Ethernet, we see a push by the platform builders that require, want to see, and need it, need Ethernet at 100 gig, but they're already seeing a need for 200 and 400, which puts a big demand on the design of the backplane and the type of connectors that we use. For instance, the VPX connector is good for 25 gigabits, or gigabaud, if you will. As time goes on, we'll see that go up. What's going to help us with that is the modulation techniques will become different. For instance, you'll have 2 bits per symbol. We'll get away with a lower overall clock rate and get more data pumped through the encoding scheme so we can present higher data rates. So that'll sort of cut us a break. But otherwise, we're under a lot of pressure to increase the speeds of the backplanes relative to what the clock rate will be.
My next guest is Dave Caserza from Elma Electronic. Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, how are you doing this afternoon?
Thank you. I'm great. So let's talk about another fun topic, PCI serial. Now, You've been seeing a lot of PCI serial lately. It's kind of coming into its own, right?
Yes, compact PCI serial is gaining momentum. It's a nice architecture, fairly easy to integrate, and can be very useful for new designs and tech refreshes of old designs.
So what particular markets are you really seeing it take hold in?
It's actually gaining momentum in a lot of places. The transportation market, industrial controls can be suitable for a number of markets, and we're even seeing the military using it.
Can you tell me any like specific designs you've seen, or is that all under embargo?
Quite often our customers won't tell us exactly what they're doing with it, but a couple that I've worked on in the last year, one was a robotic application and another one was just a very IO intensive embedded computing application.
Sure. All right, Dave. Now it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, we were just talking about this. You're the president of a private water company? What? Tell me more about that. How did you get involved with a private water company?
All right. So I live in southern Santa Clara County in California, out in the country. And in my neighborhood, we have our own private mutual water company. It serves 79 homes. And I volunteered and got elected on the board about 18 years ago. And little by little, I've become one of the people that knows the most about the system. So I'm now the president and do that in my spare time.
Now, what's the hardest part about being the president of this water company?
The fun part is just grabbing a shovel and going and looking for leaks, but that doesn't happen too much because we've improved our system. The harder part is the administrative tasks and filing reports and making sure tests are done on time and things like that.
Well, excellent, Dave. You're the first president of a private water company I've ever had in 7 years of Fish Fry. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me yet again, Dave.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, everybody, it's time for a little news you may have missed. Houston, we have a plastics problem. Edition. Yep, folks, you probably know this already, but the world is drowning in plastic. But what can we do about it? I mean, sure, we can give up straws, reuse mugs, and give up gum. Did you know that gum is actually made of a synthetic rubber? I mean, I guess I could have actually guessed that, but when I really thought about it, it pretty much grossed me out. So there you go. Yes, I am giving up gum. But what if we could turn our plastic waste into something useful, like fuel? That, my friends, is exactly what Singapore's Nanyang Technical University, or NTU, is doing right now. In some pretty amazing, groundbreaking research, a team of scientists at NTU have found a way to convert our everyday, annoying but useful consumer plastic into a chemical used to produce electricity in hydrogen fuel cells, simply by exposing it to sunlight. Okay, I guess simple is a bit of an understatement. But the key to all of this research was the creation of a new photocatalyst from a biocompatible metal called vanadium. Now, vanadium, if you didn't know already, can be found today as part of aluminum alloys used in cars and aircraft, and apparently has some pretty cool capabilities when it comes to recycling plastics as well. So, this is how it works. The team added a vanadium-based catalyst to a solution that included consumer plastics. And then they heated that solution to 185 degrees Fahrenheit. After it was all good and warm, the team exposed that solution to artificial sunlight. And you know what happened? In 6 days, the key bonds that held that plastic together had been broken. So normally, this process would involve really high energy-intensive temperatures. But using sunlight instead? Well, that makes this process much greener and easier. But folks, the coolness does not end there. Oh no. This team also found out in the end, after the process was complete, that the vanadium, sunlight, etc., that all of it together actually developed a new way to create formic acid, a naturally occurring antibacterial agent. So, why exactly is that even cooler? Well, besides its awesome antibacterial qualities, formic acid is actually a front runner in the fuel cell movement. as a carrier of liquid hydrogen. It was announced in March of last year that scientists in Switzerland had built the world's first fuel cell based on formic acid. And get this, this Swiss prototype device can produce 7,000 kilowatts of electricity every year without any emissions whatsoever. So if we could get this acid from warming up plastic trash with the sun, huh, maybe Singapore and Switzerland are onto something here. So if you want to check out even more information about these formic acid-based fuel cells or how NTU is breaking down plastic to create formic acid, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget to follow my personal Twitter account. Check out AmeliaD1978. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by you know who. Yep, that'd be me. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of December 13th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.